Let's see.
That's our 50-minute mark, broadband dip.
That's Skype telling us that they don't like it.
Yeah, there's too much intense, interesting stuff going on here. What's the tool you use that can give an alert that traders could put on at home that they could check their heart rate on, and actually will give you alerts when you're getting through a certain level? I'm interested in that.
I use the apps iRunner and iBiker.
Okay. And I assume they're the same company, just made for the two different sports.
Yeah. And what they're doing there is that, you know, when both those sports, what you're doing is that you want to hit one particular level and then another level, then another level as you bike. And all I've done is I've used them to define, levels of physiological arousal that are matched up with, basically with peak performance mind. That's what I've done. Okay.
And just to hit those levels again, if people were to buy an iRunner or an iCycle, you want to be, if you're a 65 resting heart rate, which I think will catch most medium fit males in the 35 to 55 range, some might be higher. You want to be, it's okay to be in the 70 to 75 for your working state of active awareness. And you want to start getting alerts at 78, running up to 80, and 80 is a red zone. And it's telling you, you're now in state of emotion and you could get an alert for that.
Yeah. What I will say is that those are general numbers.
Of course.
You have to take your own data. You have to take your own data, and you have to really, over a couple months, you have to zone in.
I think that goes for everybody. Yes. Other people will have different resting heart rates. I think what happens is people are going to need to play with it, and then they're going to have to retrospectively look and see at what point was I really clearly in an emotive state, and define the level that they tipped. So there's going to be a little bit of personalization and homework to do on that. But
yeah,
that's really useful.
And if you're following your screens and actual heart rates, you'll be able to see where you are in a trade. It's a fine tool. The thing is it doesn't solve the problem. It tells you that the emotion's triggered. It still comes back to the belief and what emotion has tagged to that belief. And where I think we were going in mindfulness, when you learn to what I call awaken the observing self, what you're doing is you're saying, okay, I'm going to make a jump from the traditional way that, say, Eastern observation has been taught or Western mindfulness is taught. Is that I'm going to move from being a witness to thought arising, having a life, and coming down to where you're going to take some of this intellectual, emotional intelligence stuff that we're talking about and going, I know that thought is really coming forward out of an emotional program. When I'm observing a thought, I need to be asking not only what is that thought, but I'm also asking what emotional program does that thought come from?
Yeah. So identifying the template that's attempting to dominate.
Yes. Because once you drill to that, you're saying, oh, well, this is fear. Well, then you're going, what is the assumption? What is the belief behind the fear? I might lose. And if you lose, what does that mean? And it goes back to these four self-limiting beliefs, a sense of inadequacy, a sense of not mattering, a sense of worth, a sense of powerlessness. Okay. And you're going, wow, well, where does that come from? And all of a sudden you realize that you're trying to bully this is not going to work. Is that, no, this is a pattern that's established. And the more you punch at it, the tougher it gets, the deeper it gets. What you're doing, you're saying, I'm going to have to approach it very differently. And I teach in my classes that you approach from compassion. You're actually recognizing that, no, this is actually your suffering. Whether or not you like to call it that or not, your discomfort, whatever, this is from a Buddhist perspective, no, this is your suffering. And you're saying, okay, now, this is where I need to learn how to reorganize my emotional nature. In the same way that there is fear and that there is deception, That's what I call the historical, and that's the first thing I use an observer to do for people, is for them to recognize that, oh my God, yeah, it's nothing to have fear. The thing is what do you do with that fear? How do you turn toward it? How do you master that fear? That's the real key about fear. It's not like, oh my God, I'm not a man. If I have fear, I'm not a man. Well, I guarantee you, everybody in a foxhole has fear. Okay? Everybody risking capital has a triggering, at least to concern. And what you're doing, you're saying, okay, now we're here. Is this the way I want to approach the uncertainty? Is this the way that I want to approach the challenge that uncertainty presents the organism that I am, caveman that I am, okay? And you're saying, okay, I don't have freedom from emotion. However, I do have freedom of emotion. I can rewire the emotional programs and the belief system that are behind my current response to uncertainty.
This must be some of the deepest, most difficult, and most requiring of self-awareness work a man can do, to go down into the wiring of a construct that is of a lifetime and to question whether that should be plugged in there and whether it would be better served plugging in somewhere else, and rewiring of mind and all aspects, and changing routines to look after your physicality so that you have the right biology going into and forming your moods. This is deep, deep work, Rand, and I'm not surprised that this is the work that traders fail to do, and then they end up in repetitive patterns, like Jack Schwager of the Market Wizards, who had run an account up quite promptly to $35,000, and then every time he would do something reckless with it, and like your client that you just described. This is tough stuff. So let's just go back, if we can, to the five post-it note points. So if we're to get a summary for people, what can they use that they can take away? What's their five post-it note points that they can do? And that goes right up.
Well, let's take them one at a time and see if we get to five, okay? Let's do this. The very first thing is, can you observe body?
Observe self, yes.
Observe, no, first, not even self. First, you start with observe body.
So this is biological then?
Yes, yeah, you're observing.
How am I feeling? How am I feeling? Did I get enough rest?
Yeah.
Am I in a good state of mind?
And you should know where you hold tension. You should actually have a stress signature that you've defined.
Yeah. Do I hold tension? Are you a trap shrugger? Yeah. Are you a
have I got it
eyeball asphyxiation guy?
Neck?
Yeah.
Do I have it? You know, have I got bouncy foot? You know, all that stuff you're looking and that's so familiar to you that you don't notice it?
Yes.
Well, the thing is, you need to notice it.
You need to start noticing. So number one is, how am I of body, and am I holding tension anywhere in my typical
and
places?
Then what happens,
know thyself. They say that's the great saying of know thyself. It seems like there's so much more to knowing thyself and actually having the self-awareness to know yourself. So in this state, am I tapping my foot restlessly? Am I hunching my shoulders? Am I breathing shallow into just the top third of the lungs instead of really inhaling and clearing? You know, am I holding breath? All of these things. That and start recognizing the tension in you. So now we've done the physiological, we've done body, and then we've done tension, state of relaxation, which is kind of merging into the sort of meditational mind, but is still part of the body. The signature is in the body where it goes wrong. What else goes on our list? So we've got those two bullet points, if we can. Number three, what would you say would be the next
step? Then you're asking, what mind am I bringing into this moment?
So now we talk about the mind. What is my mind? And you think about your events of the day. Are there any predominant templates? Are you angry? Are you looking for a reason to kick off? Are you relaxed? Are you calm? Are you benevolent? Etc. Okay, good. Number three. So we've gone through bio, nervous state, hypertension. What level are you there? Now we've gone mind. So we it's actually the same question on three different levels, starting with the physical. What else then would be the next in the firing order?
Then you get more specific. You ask the question, this will take some explanation, where's Orphan?
Where is orphan? Because you've already discussed now, before you go into that explanation, the identification of a particular thought and the template behind it. Now, where is orphan now sounds like a question to ask specifically, where is a particular template now that you're asking? Yes. Is he at the forefront? Is he lurking? Is he content and not playing an active role? So, sorry, go into your explanation there.
Most traders, what they do with their fear, and that actually anatomically it would be called the amygdala. I call that orphan. That's a Jungian archetypal language. And ultimately, most people have pushed their fear away, you know, thinking that's the way to regulate it and work with it. The worst thing you can do is to push your fear away.
Yeah.
Because ultimately, it's going to bite you at the very time that you don't want it to bite, because it's going to turn into an 800-pound gorilla on you. If you know where it's at, you begin to say, okay, here is my fear. And the very first thing you do then is going, I need to bring forward an empowered mind. And in my work, what you're doing is you're saying, instead of beating orphan up, what I'm going to do is I'm going to bring self-compassion. I'm going to acknowledge that, yes, this is challenging. That, you know, the thing is that I can understand where the short-term survival instincts are firing here, and that I need to be able to calm this part of myself down. You know, in mine, I use a process of externalization where you name that orphan and you talk to it, okay, as part of the calm down. And as you calm that down, what you also recognize is that there is something that I call the inner critic living within you.
I was just that about to tie that one in. It's and this is almost point four, if I can just pursue the list, calm the inner critic and give the self love. In other words, don't try be this perfectionist, this man who's pursuing the highest standards and will maybe just miss those but still reach the stars nonetheless mentality. I think there's a lot of that kind of thinking that's baked in. Stop calling yourself an idiot. Stop cursing yourself out and just say, hey, you're doing okay. This is testing game. And that's the carer to the orphan.
Yeah. We want you to interrupt that process, because what you're talking about, that inner struggle where you're cursing yourself out and stuff like that, what you're doing is inner critic. It's not you doing that. Is it the inner critic voice within you, the destructive part of yourself, taking over the committee of your mind? And it's there, and what it's doing, it's having its way with your amygdala, with your fear-based, what I call inner child, and there's nobody there for any protection. So ultimately you're recognizing, oh my God, this dance has been going on. And a lot of people, when they first start this, cannot distinguish the inner critic from the orphan. And you have to learn, though, what happens is that when you start hearing thoughts that are fearful in nature, that's an orphan. If you start hearing thoughts that are judgmental, critical in nature, that's inner critic. Or tempting, by the way, okay, for those of you who overtrade and revenge trade and stuff like that. But the key is what you're doing is you have to recognize that those are emotional programs in the brain.
Yeah.
Those are the ones that in that given situation, it is natural for them. They've been fired together. They've been wired together. They immediately pop up on the cue. And what you're doing is you're saying, I have to acknowledge that the cue's been triggered. They're here. Now, what do? You start your breathing. You start your mindfulness. You bring compassion to the orphan. You calm it down.
It seems the pursuit of balance courage is also a big thing in this.
Sense of self-protection. Huge. You know, it's just what kind of balanced mind do you want? You know, if you happen to be a schizophrenic, you have a balanced mind as long as you like delusions.
Yeah.
Okay.
What I mean is, if the inner critic is being dominant, you need to bring in that aspect that is self-loving and calming, the carer.
Yes. Call courage or warrior, critical voice that lives within you. And Francis, the point is that voice is not you. It's an emotional program in the mind that you have fused to. And what we're asking in mindfulness is step back out of that and recognize, no, this is that highly destructive part of the self called inner critic.
Yes.
You know, whether we call it yin yang, whether or not we call it the dark wolf, whether or not we call it critical voice, whether or not we call it a demon. You know, all those are just simply ways of describing this phenomenon of a very self-destructive or a destructive element of the self. And that's
I love
there.
That word fused as well. We do kind of just get conditioned in that we just melt it into who we are.
Yes.
It's kind of take this template and you just melt it in. And it isn't who you are. And defusing these templates we've melted in over so many decades of life, once again, just reminds me why. To every trader, they need to be listening what Rand's saying right now and understanding the scale of the job in debunking and moving away from belief systems and dominant templates that play out, recognizing them, bringing things back to balance, and recognizing the role right back to biology and state of the mind, and then that your thoughts are not you. That was another powerful comment that one of the powerful messages you made in the second series was, you know, you are not the combination of the thoughts that get generated. Those are just spit outs from various templates, and you should capture them, toe tag them as to from whence they come, so that you can recognize the different role players, and you are shining the torch inwards into that dark committee table boardroom and recognizing the different caricatures that are trying to enforce themselves.
Shining that light is the observer, and those templates are what I call archetypes.
Correct.
Okay. And what you're doing in this scenario, I'm saying, of these bullet points, is that what you've done is you've confronted this inner critic part of yourself and you've soothed your fear. The next goes, well, if I understand that I have freedom, I don't have freedom from emotion. I know this is going to be an emotional experience, and emotion's going to definitely arise when I engage uncertainty. Okay. Well, what emotions are going to arise? And what you're doing is saying, I need to retrain the way the brain has arrived at this from history to this new moment for design. And what you're saying is that in this, also in the same way that you have the fear, you have the criticism, you have the soothing, and that you have courage, you also have both discipline, okay? You have discipline and clear thinking, okay? And ultimately, what you're doing on discipline, and understand for me, discipline, I define discipline as the capacity to maintain order under pressure.
Discipline, I love and that definition. I'm going to repeat it for everybody, just in case they didn't get it. Discipline is the capacity to maintain order when under pressure. Maintaining order under pressure. Everyone can be orderly when it's just a lovely, beautiful morning starting the day. When the chips are down, who loses their head and who actually becomes more calm, more ordered, more sensible? That is a lovely definition of discipline. Sorry, carry on.
Yeah. And if you have not calmed the fear of the amygdala down, you're not going to get there. If you have not confronted the inner critic, you're not going to get there. Discipline is a high order emotional state, okay? It's not one of the low orders. That, you know, if you look at it, is that fear is the mother of all emotion, okay? Anger is its relative. And what you also discover is that joy is a primitive emotion. Sadness is a primitive emotion, as is anxiety. Fear is a primitive emotion, as is disgust, believe it or not, okay? Those are the primitive emotions, but outside of those, there are more complex, nuanced emotions, of which discipline is one of them. Discipline from an archetypal standpoint or a template standpoint would be called ruler.
Yes.
And a lot of my work is getting people to observe through the function of discipline, of ruler, because that's when you say, I have a disciplined mind. That's what you're saying is you have gone to this emotional program of discipline. And it is the major emotional program that is in working awareness. A lot of people would call that the executive function. But the thing is that understand what you've had to do is you have to emotionally regulate all that other stuff for you to get to the discipline of ruler. when rulers there, suddenly you start discovering is that the whole committee changes. It reorganizes itself in order to be able to face uncertainty from a very different mind. I would call it the empowered mind, or what I call the traitor state of mind, rather than a fearful state of mind or a winner's state of mind. I'm looking for, okay, I know this is probability. I know that it will fail. The only thing that we can really control is our performance.
Yep.
And what we're going to do is we're going to be focused on performance. We're not going to be looking at outcome. You know, we will look at outcome at another time, at another place. But in the midst of the heat of this trade, of this performance, I'm focused on process. That's what discipline and, you know, what I do in my work is I actually teach how to get at emotional programs, not by visualization, not by affirmations. I mean, how many traders use the affirmation, I'm a disciplined trader, I'm a disciplined trader, and then they blow themselves up? In and by themselves, affirmations and visualizations really don't work well. What you have to be able to do is you have to dig into the brain, and you have to recognize that memory is fluid. It's not video. And what you're doing is you're going, okay, when have I been exposed to situations where I have been really challenged? I didn't know the outcome. And, you know, something, the brain will organize that experience into memory based on the observer and the emotional state. And out of that, it will forfeit a lot of what actually happened.
That's part of the mental enrichment process as well. We all had such amazing childhoods. We forget all the tension and worrying if teacher was going to check our homework and being afraid of dad and all of that sort of stuff. It was just fun and games, running in the park and swimming in summer. I suppose that is the observer that is I suppose, retaining joy.
Yeah. Saying, no, this is the way I'm supposed to be. I'm supposed to be joyful. Nobody's supposed to have a dysfunctional home. Well, the truth is two very, very fine UK psychiatrists, John Bowlesby Mary Ainsworth. They were the mother and father of attachment theory. And what they discovered in the UK is that they assumed almost everybody came from a healthy, happy family. And what they discovered is that very few people, like less than 10% of the population, of any population, is coming from a good enough family. And they finally came to the moment where they threw away perfection, and they were just simply looking for okay enough families to impart basically the history of emotional responses to the environment. Okay? That's just part of our nature. And what we have to do as adults is reprogram that. That's the whole point. And ultimately, though, what you're looking at is the brain is taking experience, encoding it into memory, and it's missing a heck of a lot. Francis, I used to, back in another time in another place, I actually used to be an expert witness in abuse cases where I would be the one who debriefed the victim. And the reason they hired me to do it was because I got memories out of the victims that stood up in the rigors of the U.S. court system better than other people. I didn't say the truth. I said I got memories that could withstand the rigors of a defense counsel, okay? And ultimately, what I did is when the brain's creating memory, it's literally saying, okay, I'll take this suggestion. Before you know it, you have a false memory.
Yes.
And you will swear on a stack of Bibles that it's the truth once the brain has organized the experience into a memory and it learns to pull it back up. You will believe that's the truth. And yet what you also discover is that eyewitness accounts are some of the poorest accounts that are imaginable in court. So what you're doing is you're going, I need to train the brain to be able to reinterpret an event that allows me to get at emotional programs that I shut out of awareness. And you're pulling them back in, and you're doing it, but this time you're actually taking the visceral memory of that emotional program in your body. you're recreating the actual feeling state of the emotion, which creates the mind.
That's it's a complete Hollywood production, a reproduction of an old theater. It's like when Hollywood does William Shakespeare. You know, it's an interpretation of what they believe would have happened in whatever the year was of Twelfth Night or Macbeth. And we get modern-day actors with American accents. We get, modern-day themes. We get all sorts of things. And it is really just an interpretation doesn't hold candle to what was clearly an original event at that time. And our brain seems to do the same thing. It reconstructs the mental movie of a previous believed perceived weapon and fills the set out.
And what you want to do, Francis, what you're looking to do, what a traitor's wanting to do, he's wanting to go back into challenging times and reconstruct, basically recognizing that he is able to calm himself down. He is able to confront the fear. He is able to, the criticism of it's not going to work out, you're going to blow up. And he did maintain order. And out of that, what you're beginning to recognize is the belief changes. You begin to see, oh, wow, yeah, I was able to engage uncertainty with a belief that, yes, I could manage it and work through it, rather than to view uncertainty from, particularly from a biological perspective, of moving from uncertainty to fear, boom, like that.
So if I can bring a practical example, because this will be really helpful. This is excellent theory, and I'm sure many of the people are enjoying it. But let's go back to the occasional account blower upper who has success, is escalating, reaches a level and gets reckless. It's now playing with casino money, casino effect in his mind, suddenly starts taking bigger risk, is sloppier, is quick to the chase. He's just accelerates into the vortex mode. Okay, I'm up to $100,000. $1 million is just at this rate, that projection into the future. Let's see if we can get there double quick time. Then I can make whatever purchase. All the negative things you shouldn't be doing. How do we counsel someone who's having some success but has a habit of vorticing and getting hyper extended into the market as he starts having more success, getting into overtrading, oversizing, over thing? We know our first few bullets, recognizing the mind, possibly a lot of wins recently, recognizing overconfidence, doing that. How, in terms of where we're talking now, recognizing the template, which might be the warrior or the over-dominant, I don't actually know. What mental template would you see as taking control? The greed genie, who it's driven out of what aspect of the mind?
That would be orphan and inner critic. And let me give you an example I'm working with. I work with a guy who has gone through what I would call a fairly historical progression. At first he was just all over the place, and he's working with me, and he gets himself organized, and he becomes consistently profitable. Okay, and then we start sizing up, and as he's doing that, he reaches a particular size and starts blowing up again. Okay, and then what happens is he reaches another size and he blows up again. He starts the pattern of going, I'm building the account, and then I'm blowing it up. Interestingly, in this particular guy, again, we've gone through all the inner critic and the orphan stuff, but in this particular case, what was happening with him, okay, once he entered a trade, he has a set methodology of looking at 3-minute bars, and within the 5 of them, usually by the 3rd or 4th, he knows whether or not he needs to stay in there because it becomes really high probability, or whether or not his hypothesis is wrong and he needs to get out. Okay? What was happening is consistently he would be getting to that point where his methodology was telling him his hypothesis was wrong. And he wouldn't get out, and he would say, I'm going to give it a little room. which is just, you know, you're no longer applying a standard practice to a random event to find the patterning and the edge in there. Ultimately, when we drill down, we're going, who's saying this? Let me give it a little room. That's temptation. And you're going, oh, temptation. That would be the inner critic, not showing up as criticism, but as temptation. And then you're going, well, if the inner critic's there, the orphan has to be there too. They're dancing with one another.
I was about to say, I would have guessed the orphan with temptation. I don't know why.
Now, but let me give it a little more. Give it a little more. Give it a little more. You can do this. You can give it a little more. Prove yourself. Okay? That's the big deal here. The orphan is, I'm going to prove myself. I'm going to show that I can do it. I can show that I can do it. I'm going to show I can do it. And then, of course, you do something like that, and you're gambling at that point. You no longer have an edge, okay?
Yeah.
Ultimately, what this came down to, and again, this is not just getting past the managing the physicality of an emotion. This gets down to deep-seated meaning that you're projecting into the markets, deep-seated beliefs. Ultimately, he grew up, and his best friend was valedictorian of his high school. And Mike was never the sharpest arrow in the quill, okay? But what happened is he worked like a bulldog. He worked, he worked, he worked, he worked. And basically he would just slug it out and make things happen.
Brute force now, effort.
And as an account, as a CPA, an accountant in the United States, it worked really well because you could just simply go through it and you could win. In trading, that did not work. Ultimately, it came down to somewhere between childhood and adolescence, he learns that he's not smart enough. I'm not really very smart. I'm hanging on these really smart guys. I have to prove myself. That's the orphan. Okay?
Yeah.
I have to prove myself. I have to prove that I'm adequate. I have to prove that I'm smart.
The orphan seems to be associated with everything where you're a bit needy and you feel you're unders and you're compensating for a lack.
And the exact opposite also. The moment that you start acting in a grandiose way, look at me like an alpha male, I'm in control, I'm going to make things happen, you're proving your worth by action. And the truth is that, you know, the continuum orphan goes from a victim to alpha who's got to win because winning is everything. Or alphas don't do well in trading at all. You know, they blow things up until they learn to, wow, I can't make things happen. I have to actually learn to be patient and wait for things to come to me.
Exactly.
Back to Mike, though. Mike's in this situation where he recognizes, oh, my God, there it is that I gave it more room. I had to prove myself smart enough just like I did back then. Then you start realizing the history of it is his dad, smart guy that he was a retail banker who was constantly lending money to very wealthy people, but he himself drove a Buick. And you could see that there was this scarcity thinking of, I just can't, I'm not good enough to be hanging out with the big boys. And I stayed in this small marginal area. And you begin to see the transmission of this self-limiting belief from one generation to the next. And Francis, it would have happened for generations upon generations upon generations. There's nothing wrong with this family system. There's a lot right with it. It's a loving family. They were loved. They, you know, everything like that. It's just there's this scarcity thinking that's becoming involved. I'm not good enough. And ultimately, that was the place that, and Mike's actually just pulled in his month that we've just worked with. He wrote and said, I've had a very strong month. And what he's doing is he's recognizing that the moment that he starts getting tired, he starts neglecting observing the inner game that's going on within him.
Yeah.
And so what he's done is he's built systems into the way he engages the markets, that take breaks, realigns himself, makes sure that this orphan nature of his is taken care of and that he's become more of a kind teacher. then
so can I put a bullet down, because we're coming close to the end. We've been going already for over an hour, and this is awesome material. It sounds like that very description, building in breaks, monitoring, putting physical things that will alert you to heightened states where the physicality are kicking in, seem to be a common theme. And he's building in a structure about how he trades. He's building in a structure, yes, about resting, and sticking to a methodology that seems to encompass many things, including physiological, biological things.
Yeah, it's where psychology and methodology merge, is that any trader, literally, as they're trading, as they start entering critical moments in their trading, they should have a methodology, a process of kicking in, excuse me, kicking in their psychology into higher gear to make sure that they're prepared for the performance required in that moment. Whether or not you're using indicators and you see that indicator turning a color, that color should cue you into reorganizing psychology at that moment before you make the move, rather than trying to recover once you've made the move and once fight flight's already triggered. No, what happens is you're using mental preparedness. You're recognizing your tendencies, and you're saying, okay, I know that's orphan, and that's that amygdala, that's all the patterning for, you know, survival in a particular environment. And you're going, okay, I get the self-preservation, but what we want here is a probability-based mind rather than a self-preservation-based mind. And you're going, I can prepare that, but I just can't wait till I get in there. I need to prepare it. I know what that mind needs to look like. Okay? And I can build it. It becomes an intentional mind that you would never think about entering a trade without looking at the mind and making sure that it's in the right place. You're just not going to take any old mind that happens to show up. It becomes intentional, and you've learned how to cue up these emotional programs to respond to uncertainty rather than just having the historical design from evolution and experience create it for you. It can be done, and I see it being done every day, and it does take work. You know, people often, what they're looking for me often is, well, let me talk to Randy, and he will probably be able to tell me some tip that, if I know that one tip, it's going to change everything about my psychology of engaging uncertainty. No, it's not. This is a process. This is, you know, change is not an event. It's a process that you learn to retrain the circuitry, okay? And it's not on-off. It's these neurons have learned to fire together, and they, yep, wire together, and they don't want to change. And for you to go in and to reorganize, tease it apart and to reorganize it into a different habit, it requires effort.
Yep. And they fuse. I love the use of that word, fuse. The more you keep repeating the template, the more you're reinforcing it, and the more you fuse them together, which is why you have to break up these ruts. They're almost like ruts in the road that your tire can get caught in. You have to break them up by manually intervening when you see the, you know, your wheel being taken for you due to the nature of the ruts. You've got to get out. This has been a fascinating session, Rand. I'm really enjoying it. And I think final couple of minutes, anything closing that you would say for all our listeners that are going to be coming in? I just want to say, while you gather your thoughts and get your best closing statement together, I've really enjoyed doing the series with Rand. And once again, I'm just going to hold the book up. This is Recommended Market Sniper Reading. This is Mindful Trading, Mastering Your Emotions and the Inner Game. Mindful Trading, Master Your Emotions and the Inner Game. And it is on www.mytraders.com/statofmind. So there's two S's in the row there, and you put My Traders in front of it. So correction to what I said in the beginning. Go get the book and start reading. You're going to understand. Now, book and reading a book can do one thing for a guy, Rand. You can get a kind of a understanding of the nature of the problem and some of the things you need to do. But to be truthful, if people are serious about their trading and they want to move seriously forward and they want to go and grasp deep-seated mindset changes in their mastery of their trading mind, they often are going to need more than just a good read. For those of you that are watching this and enjoying this, we're looking to putting together a program of some of Rand's finest materials, both reading, training. What's some of the componentry of the attributes that you bring together for your students, Rand? I'd like to give you the opportunity better than myself to highlight some of those.
Well, in the program that we're developing, it's a self-study program that is basically offered mutually. The key is that if you're going to really develop the mind for trading, you're going to be taking and moving away from an outcome basis to a process basis mind, okay?
Yes.
Because you do not control outcome. You can control the mind you bring to manage process, though. That's the major thing.
Yes. And ultimately, that was session one. We really nailed that one, and it's good that you're just doing the recap. Sorry, yes.
Yeah. Once you understand that this is not going to go away, okay, that's the point. It's not going to go away. You're not going to use exposure repeatedly putting yourself into this thing, and the mind's going to adapt and give you the holy grail to trade. What happens is the more you use exposure and the more you hit the uncertainty and the more you don't know how to engage the uncertainty, the worse the habit becomes. And that's why most people are in and out of trading in 3 years. They've blown their account. They've blown their capital. They don't grasp that, no, this is a mind that has to be built. Okay? To do that, in all my programs, is that you discover it starts with breath. Okay? Unless you manage breath, you can't manage the intensity of the biology of the emotion. If you can't,
so that's got to go. This is the stop repeating. Sorry, I'm going to keep cutting in just to get the highlight marker out because you're dropping gems here, and I want things to stick. And repetition does help things to stick. Although I'm not a rote teacher, that is an absolute fundamental, physical, absolute brilliant one that came out in session two in the stop the bleeding session. What you must be mindful of physically and biologically is always breath, because that will show whether you're holding tension. And when you release and you focus on the breathing, and this is taking you into the realm of meditation and watching and the mindfulness as well, that is the best thing to defuse the fight flight that is starting to grasp and clamp everything down. And you also very validly, and I mention it often now, highlighted how glucose and oxygen drains from the brain to get to the fight flight. How do you do a turbo charge, jump over a rock and scamper up a tree to escape the saber-toothed tiger? You hoard all your resources in your muscles so they are stacked and loaded. But of course, anywhere where you hoard in one part of your anatomy is depleted elsewhere. You don't need your brain to think. You need to just be instinctive. And of course, if it's a rational game where we're mastering and trading is determined by rationality and sticking to process, you are in your most depleted physiological state biologically by virtue of all that glucose. And we've spoken about the V8 that is churning just on idle, is glugging down those quarter pints, never mind when it's on full chatter, and you are absolutely depleting the fuel for the motor, and the engine cuts out, and the brain ceases to be part of the function of that. So that really, really, really strong one. Thank you. And I just jump in to do the big crayon scribble on that with the big highlight marker.
Once you get emotional regulation down and it becomes a practice, it's not going to change anything. It's a tool that you use for change. It gets you to the door of the mind. Then you have to develop mindfulness, or what I would call awakening the observer. You know, I have a specialized way that I teach it, and I think it's highly effective. But ultimately, you have to be able to be able to step back out of current thinking and observe it and recognize that that is just one organization of thoughts and beliefs. It's not you. And with that, that's a powerful thing. As you go, oh, I'm not my thoughts and my beliefs. No, you're not. As long as the observer hasn't fused to it, we're teaching you how to defuse and step back and say, oh, this can be reorganized. Yes, And the first thing, as you develop that mindfulness, and again, this is stuff that can be taught, and it's taught in this program that we've been talking about, you move to saying, well, now that I've got this mindfulness stuff, this observer, what do I need to be doing? The first thing I want you to do is to observe this historical internal dialogue of self-limiting beliefs that's been running around in your head out of your conscious head. And we want to put it into working awareness, and we want you to get to know it and turn toward it.
I love that. Jumping in on that, if I can again, just for a minor diatribe, is we essentially all have in some form or format. It's almost impossible to have gone through childhood, had relationships, been a minor, anything without having some footprints in the mind that have diminishing or undermining or unhelpful, may have been relevant and needed for the time actually and just dated, but you have unhelpful templates that were specific to a time, or you have real damage. And we need to go back almost and understand ourselves and our history and the templates of our mind and how they were created, so that we can identify them when we have that crazy thought. We can identify the committee mind member that is actually throwing it out and why it might have been that way. How did he come to have?
You know, what we're looking for is to understand it where the genesis of a pattern triggers. You know, we want to drag you through childhood. What we want to see is where that pattern had genesis and what were the circumstances that generated the necessity of that pattern.
I didn't mean a whole weeping psychologist live your pains and traumas again. More just the identification as well. I get totally what you're saying. We don't need to revel and sob and be all melancholy about past gone by, but just understanding origin and source.
You need to know
and
the
identifying.
Pattern.
Yes,
and you need
and we are pattern traders.
Yes, and what we're doing is we're saying you need to understand the pattern that's taking over perception, because ultimately it's going to be from orphan. That's this amygdala. Yep. That's this limbic system that organizes you to survive in an environment. It's just that it did well in that environment, but we're talking about a different environment that requires a different organization.
Absolutely.
Otherwise, you could stay the way you've been. That'd be great. But in trading, you require not a survival mind. You require a probability mind.
Correct.
And what you're doing is you're understanding the self-destructive quality and observing for it and beginning to develop a feel for it, because it's been a submarine. You've been ignoring it. And it's been ambushing you and torpedoing you, and you're beginning to recognize, no, I need to know where that destructive part of me is, because I constantly know it's trying to get into my committee of the mind and create cat habit. I need to know it before it gets in. And you come and you learn to say, I need to take that fear-based part of myself, that amygdala stuff, that fight-flight stuff, that orphan, the way I call it, and I need to learn how to calm it down. And from there, you're taking the same applied mindfulness that's observed the fear base that's in you and the critical base within you. Then you're saying, I then need to bring forward these other emotional programs of discipline, of self-soothing, of courage, and of the clear thinking. I know those are emotional programs. I know that I can pull them up. And I can start creating a mind based on them to engage uncertainty. That's the big news, is that you become designer of the mind that you're engaging uncertainty with. Uncertainty's still there. The challenges are still there. The inner struggle's still there. But what we're saying is you can bring an intentional mind into that moment rather than the historical mind. And if you're happy with the historical mind, fine. It's just that ask your trading account if it's happy, okay? And you're going, okay, to pray probability, which is going to aid my trading account, I need to develop these emotional programs that give rise to mine rather than the old historical programs the default programs that I came stock with. Out of that, what you're doing is you have an intentional mind that changes the entire playing field. You're focusing on process rather than outcome. The whole notion of having to win to prove the self is an illusion. And you're recognizing this is all about probability. This is all about me consistently performing and maintaining that performance. Because if I do that, then my methodology is going to truly have an edge, and it's going to extract capital out of the markets.
Got you. If I can encapsulate, because we're going to have our 50-minute dip again soon. So if I'm going to encapsulate, I want to throw a very interesting comment in. My view of markets and why patterns occur in price behavior is because there is a collective psychology of the average market's mind as well, from their fears, from their greeds, and they create the similar patterns because they respond, they put themselves in situations where they then are responding in certain ways. And it's our job to remain more mindful and learn more recognition orientated towards our own patterns and the patterns of the collective market. That are occurring. One of the reasons why we see ourselves as trading, and then say what potential probability of outcome comes next as a trader, and recognizing that all these people are participants in their own mind journey, and most don't transcend out of their enforced present pattern templates. They are always in the fused wiring they have created, which starts right from childhood and continues to get fused. And the whole game is being more mindful than the collective mass of professional traders, because the institutions and some of the best traders are the biggest money in the game. So this has been a really, really fascinating session, Rand. Thank you for helping us flesh out those 7 bullets. We will be potentially doing a specific course and program. The full specification thereof is yet to be agreed. We're going to be getting out this promotional material. By the time you are watching this, hopefully you will have seen the value of just some, and I think everything has been, there's so many gems here. I actually got a list of about 30 things that I would want to have on my post-it notes. I tried to keep it at 5, but there was no chance.
It's a big post-it note.
There won't be, I'll be put it on the screen, and I'll be spying the chart in the top right corner in a little window. Rand, thank you so much. This has been a big effort. Rand's set aside, you know, the better part of an hour and a half plus for 3 separate sessions and some editing. So I'll be getting these copies of these over to you, Rand, and we'll be getting these out soon in a nice format that people can enjoy. And stay close. Follow me on at the Market Sniper and at the Crypto Sniper. Go to Rand's site. You don't do social media on any great scale that you want to share with us, Rand, at this point?
Not yet. You can go to YouTube and see well over 100 videos from me. But I am just exploring Facebook and LinkedIn. I've discovered that I am going to have to be pulled.
You're an awakening giant, a late adopter in that space, but he has an excellent YouTube channel. I've watched a number of the YouTube clips. You will get some of these as well. So Rand Howell, Rand with an E at the end of it, Howell, that's with two L's at the end, Howell. And we will be bringing a potential proposition which will be defined by the time you're probably watching this, where you can get more actively involved in becoming the mindful trader with a true expert who's done it with many traders whose success subsequently speak for themselves. This is a mental game.
Let me make a comment on that. What happens is what most people do is talk about trader psychology. Like we're talking about trader psychology. The thing is that talking about trader psychology is interesting, but it doesn't change anything.
Correct.
What we're talking about doing is in the coursework, we're actually talking about how do you change? How do you do the work of trader psychology to create the mind that can trade effectively? Big difference.
Massive difference. And I make the same point on myself. You know, I have a theory weekend, which is the impartment of knowledge. But that is actually relatively useless because without the implementation of that knowledge through the trading days, 3 months on a community correction, a bit of monkey see, monkey do, follow, then doing it for yourself, all of this. You can read a book about riding a bicycle. If you're not on the bike falling over, you don't get the learning. And the implementation is where the knowledge converts into real wisdom, insight, and a shift. And Rand is making the same point, and I think it's one very well made. And this is just the talk, is what we're saying. This is your foreplay to potentially taking on something far more detailed that can actually shift you consequentially, and have you challenging those fused wires and their arrangement. Rand, any parting shots before I let you go?
Not really. Other than that, I wish everybody well. I wish that people really take trading as a forced entry into self-mastery, and to recognize that this is really about developing the mind. Once you have knowledge, this is about developing the mind on a completely new level.
And, mastery.
Yeah, mastery. And this is the – and every super athlete has psychological coaches.
Correct.
Every super trader in the potential needs coaching, both from a method standpoint and from a psychological standpoint, to hit peak performance. And I wish it for all of you.
That's very good and a very kind and generous wish. And you did make the point that many people, when they started working on their mindfulness for their trading, their golf game improved, their relationships improved. This isn't just about trading. This is life. Mastery in trading is a microcosm of all levels. There'll be so many other side benefits that will trickle through, but that's one for another day. Rand, thank you very much. Thank you for taking the time up. Go enjoy that southern summer. Get your sweater off and get some sun on your back. You've done an awesome job. You're now done. It's down to me. I'll be working on getting this put together, and I'm sure everyone's going to love what we've got here. Thank you, and have a great weekend.
Thank you very much.